If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison. How you doing, Adam?
Hanging in there.
That's what I like to hear.
I'm the cat on the branch.
Hang in there, baby. I don't want you to lose your grip.
You know, here's the awful truth about the hang in there poster. Cat's going to be fine. Even if he lets go of the branch, he's going to be fine.
Yeah, you're going to land on your feet, just like that cat would.
He's got like 14 lives in him. You can tell by looking at him. He's going to be great. As long as he stays out of the street. That's one place the cats can't go.
Yeah. There's a cat in my neighborhood that I see sometimes. This is like the most relaxed cat of all time. It's the only cat that Darwin has ever gotten anywhere near. Because Darwin will, like, bark his head off at this cat and then, like, carefully approach and smell the cat. And the cat stays lying there like, yeah, go ahead. I don't give a fuck.
Is there anything as dumb looking as a sneaky dog?
No. Dogs are not.
Our dogs both have that sneak maneuver.
Yeah.
And you're not camouflaged, buddy.
Yeah.
You're not cloaked.
You have not done anything to plausibly conceal yourself. But this cat, one thing that it does that blows my mind is that I've seen this multiple times, that it will like decide to plop itself down and take a nap in between the curb and the wheel of a parked car. Yeah. If somebody gets in that car and drives away, they're not going to know that cat's there.
No, no one's going to know a cat was there.
No, it's going to turn into cat grease.
Gross.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I have been debating whether I wanted to mention this on the show or not, but it's like a kind of major thing that's happening in my life, and I feel like our listeners have gotten us this far and probably deserve to know. My wife and I have bought a house.
We love it when the homeowner gets involved with the renovation.
Wow.
Very weird timing to buy a house.
It's the classic plumber's lament.
Yeah, especially since the house's last occupants died so mysteriously.
Yeah. But we've been saving for like 5 years, and this was kind of when it was going to happen, if it was going to happen.
Yeah. Congratulations, man.
Thank you. Yeah, we're getting ready to move in. We got a few things that we need to do. My mom and dad are coming down from the Bay Area to help me out. My mom is going to make curtains for all of our windows. She's bringing the sewing machine. My dad's going to help me build a pergola in the backyard.
So kind of a good news, bad news situation, sounds like. Hey, does your mom's curtains match the drapes?
I'll fucking kill you. My mom listens to this show.
Well, you're about to find out, and all of your house guests are about to, too. That'll be a delight. They're never going to leave, Ben.
Yeah.
You get them on projects, forget it. That guest room is theirs.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that guest room would be mine. That's why I'm so upset by this.
That guest room is going to be my wife's office for the foreseeable future. I mean, I think part of the impetus here was we're in a quite a small
rental apartment and moving into this place. It doesn't have it's a two bedroom, but I will be able to take all of my crap out of the second bedroom and put it in this weird back building attached to the garage that is going to become my studio. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe we can like put an inflatable mattress in there for you.
The realtor didn't call it the meth-making facility of the previous tenant, but...
Right. Anybody that smells it knows what it was.
The show's going to start to get pretty weird once the studio's built in that thing.
Yeah.
Pretty exciting situation for you.
I was thinking about it the other day, and I was reflecting on, oh, man, like, I've been working toward this since before I had a Star Trek podcast with my friend Adam. It's been in the works for a really long time.
I don't remember a time pre-podcast. Those are the before times to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, I did bonk you on the head super hard to convince you to start this thing with me, so.
Yeah, you got me caveman style.
I'm just dreading the day you're on vacation in some tropical paradise and a coconut falls from a tree and you realize what a folly you've been engaged in these past few years.
Yeah, eventually I'll come too.
But all that is to say, I am feeling very lucky and very excited and honestly couldn't imagine being able to do this without the support of our listeners. So, I guess I would have had to find a different way to make a living if the podcast hadn't started.
And it's the house that the Friends of DeSoto built.
Yeah, you can really think of it that way.
Well, you know, you owe them a place to crash anytime they come through, Ben.
Yeah.
That's the obligation.
If you can demonstrate that you have access to the bonus feed at the door, we will show you into the guest room.
Wow. That sounds horrible.
Hey, my door is always open to a friend of DeSoto, but you have to find me first.
Right.
So yeah, that's where I'm at. I just felt like I don't want to feel like I'm bragging because
it's going to be a big part of your life for a long time, and to ignore it on the show, like the show is us and we are the show.
Right.
Is to be dishonest, I think.
So, anyways, I hope this doesn't come across as like a gloat or something, because I love you guys and I'm coming from a place of deep appreciation.
I'm going to address the Friends of DeSoto here.
Oh yeah,
I'm looking right into the camera when I do that.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen the house, Friends of DeSoto. He's not bragging. Needs a lot of work.
It does need a shitload of work. It's in not great shape right now. It is what you call a fixer-upper.
Son of a bitch, you moved the cemetery, but you left the bodies, didn't you?
You remember the beginning of Money Pit? That's where we're at right now. We're in the first act of Money Pit.
Yeah, the tub has not fallen through the floor yet.
Right. But it could. Don't overfill the tub, Ben. That's my advice.
Yeah. Do you want to get into the episode we came to talk about today, Adam?
Yeah. It's Deep Space Nine, Season 7, Episode 7. Lucky episode today, huh?
Mm.
It's called Once More Unto the Breach.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
And Worf has kind of become the nosy bar patron at this point. O'Brien and Bashir, talking about O'Brien and Bashir stuff.
Yeah.
You are both wrong.
Why don't you butt the hell out, Worf? This doesn't concern you.
Do me a favor, just mind your business, please. What the fuck?
Like, this is a fun kind of bar hang, right? Just kind of like debating some bullshit topic. I think that if you wrote this in 2020, though, Worf would have like a way more like, you know, Davy Crockett was a part of an imperialist adventure stealing land from Mexico.
I have experienced a cowboy-style holodeck recreation where I shot Commander Data over and over again. Like, he has experience with this kind of scene, but he's not interested in having a conversation. He's interested in a monologue, and then he leaves. And I love on his way out the door, we get that three shot of like all three of them watching him go mourn O'Brien and Bashir. I love that composition.
Yeah, very fun. Worf's in a mood and he goes home and he gets a knock on the door. Who could it be but Dahar Master Kor?
Dahar Master Kor.
Hell yeah.
This is one of many requests that Worf has gotten over the years. Help me die, Worf.
Yeah.
Is basically what Kor's message is.
Nobody is going to ride harder for you dying an honorable death if you ask them for help with something like that than Worf.
Show some pride in your accomplishments. You've earned it.
I will try.
Worf has a body count. He really has a track record here that is dependable for someone like Kor.
Yeah. So he fills a couple of flagons and they sit down to enjoy a little bit of blood wine. And what Kor explains is that he has he's actually had a hard time getting war work lately. He's pissed too many people off.
He's on the war unemployment line. It's a tough spot to be. This is all Worf's fault, though. Worf should be interrogating this moment a little further because this is Dahar Master Kor, after all.
Right.
Why can't he get a job?
But
he never asks.
He does not ask. Worf is not an inquisitive man, ever. We come into Martok's office, and he's working with this old, like, adjutant guy. I'm going to call him Klingold because he's an old Klingon.
Yeah, all right. Let's do that.
And this guy's very sad. And
his Klingon name is Darok, which is just too much like Derek to me. That's yeah. What I want to call him. Except there are no old Dereks.
There's something very tragic about this character because you know that he's not... Like, what it made me think is Kor really needs to check his glory privilege because this guy's never going to get in a glorious battle where he goes out with honor, right? He's too old. I mean, look at him. He's so old.
With his loose loaf and old batleth.
Gross.
This sounds like an innocuous professional favor to ask, which is why it's so shocking.
Hey, we got a Jahar master hanging around the station. He's looking for a command. You've got some spare ships. Why don't you throw him one? You seen that guy? He's great. As far as Dahar goes, he has mastered the whole thing.
Martok's like, is that blood wine on your breath? What the fuck, man? Sober up before asking me such a dumbass question. And Martok is fucking pissed.
Kor, the Dahar master.
Ready. Not another word. Do you hear? Not one word.
He really fucking hates Kor, but does not clarify why he hates Kor in this scene.
Classic Worf eyes to theme on this one. We get kind of a Worf eye double take here, too, before going into it. I feel like they had a couple seconds to pad here. Let's just stay on the shot. I'm not calling cut yet, Michael Dorn.
Yeah.
Why don't you flash me a couple of those eyes?
Stay in it. Stay in it. He is, like, often asked to walk out into a hallway and then pause in front of the camera and absorb what just went down.
This is the stuff we laugh about in soap operas. It's so interesting that it's not ever funny in Star Trek, and yet it is, like, a way that Star Trek looks and feels and has for years and years. Except you never push in Star Trek, right? That's the difference. On a soap opera, you're making that a move.
I think that, like, early TNG, they push in, you know? And it's like, they're not above, like, the dun-dun-dun!
Yeah.
We get very little Captain Sisko in this episode.
Yeah,
but what we do get of him is in the scene after the opening credits, where he discusses the idea of a cavalry raid with Martok. They're going to take a bunch of birds of prey and just kind of like run around behind enemy lines, smashing shit and making big problems for the Dominion's ability to birth Jem'Hadar and manufacture starships, etc.
We cut to Damar and Weyoun, and Damar is just face down in a pool of his own vom. It's a good thing he passed out face down instead of face up. That's the way we like to fuck. You don't want an asphyxiation issue there if you've been pounding Kanar like Damar has been.
We cut back to the station where Martok on the Chitang is kind of overseeing re-rigging the ship for this operation. They're getting some last-minute repairs arranged for and whatnot. And Worf again asks Martok, "Hey, listen, I've got a great idea. Why don't we do something W/R/T? The honor of Kor."
"I wish to speak with you about Kor."
"Clear the bridge!"
It's like he called Martok a Patak to his face.
Yeah, right.
I love this moment.
Martok says, "I did not expect to be hearing you call me a Patak in front of everyone." And Worf said, "What, man? It's just freedom of speech. Doesn't do anybody any harm. Sticks and stones, baby."
We get a nice centerpiece scene for J.G. Hertzler here. You hear a storm in the distance, and then the spotlight comes up on Martok, where he delivers the story.
Yeah.
The centerpiece story about why he hates Kor.
It's a long story with a lot of beats.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's basically about a class war issue within the Klingon Empire. And you know, all of history can be thought of as the history of class struggle in a lot of ways, Adam.
Sure.
And this is one such example. Martok's family were dedicated soldiers, many generations, and Martok's father knew that Martok had a lot of talent, wanted him to be an officer, which would have been kind of a first for their family from the sound of it. And yeah. Martok did not get to go to West Point because Kor had something to do with the like admissions committee and saw that he didn't have like a noble lineage and so struck his name from the rolls.
"Kalish recruiters for ROTC in my high school."
Yeah, so he got, like, on some Klingon ships, you get to serve as a civilian.
Yeah.
And so he ended up on one of these ships as a civilian, probably
right.
What? Like, cleaning and preparing Gach for a crew of hundreds?
That's
not an easy life, but what happened was bangers were dropped on a ship, and he ended up getting a battlefield promotion.
Yeah,
which like, is something I wanted to see during, like, via flashback.
Where is the flashback to him, like, personally repelling a Romulan boarding party? By
we
like
push in on Martok, like old Martok, with one closed eye, and then it dissolves to a younger, youthful Martok. That eye opens, and he's like got the white chef's
uniform
on.
He's using a cleaver to like cut up some gach, and some Romulans like jump through a hull breach, and he starts chopping their heads off.
There's like an old-timey flapper version of Melota playing. Like it's he's like working in a like very clearly a Klingon diner on the ship. Things were just so much more simple back then.
Yeah. A lot of people of Martok's particular political stripe will tell you it was a golden age, but it wasn't a golden age for everyone. Least of all those Romulans invading.
So what's fucked up is like we reach the end of Martok's story and he's like, "And that is why I can never be on a crew with Kor." And Worf for a beat is like, "Well, I've put him on the Ninth Fleet already and I did that before walking in here, so yeah."
And not just the Ninth Fleet, but specifically the Chitang. Like, I don't know why Worf didn't put Kor just on a not Martok ship of all the ships that he could have picked.
It's like Worf wrote this episode. That's the sort of sense that it makes for that decision to happen because there's no fuck. How big is the Ninth Fleet? Not very big, I guess.
No, it's a little. I mean, and especially for this raid, it's like five little ships, right?
You don't want to date anyone from the Ninth Fleet. You're just going to run into them all the time if you break up.
Mm.
It's a bad idea.
Yeah. Martok is like, "Fine, like, do whatever the fuck you want. Just keep him out of my way. Like, as long as he doesn't become my problem, I'm going to look past this.
As long as you don't staff him on my bridge, won't be a problem."
Right. Out of sight, out of mind. That's fine, Worf. You know, whatever.
I mean, that would be insane, Worf.
And Worf is like,
"I do not know how interpersonal relationships work."
Golden cut.
The cut.
Golden cut.
So,
back on Deep Space Nine, Esri is having a hang with Kor, and they're doing the catch up of old friends. You know, Kor knew Curzon and Jadzia. They fought and died together.
Yeah.
And so he's kind of, you know, testing Esri for all this stuff. Worf kind of like comes around the corner on the promenade, and you feel a chill come through the room, and Esri knows that's her cue to get out of there.
Yeah.
So she scrams, and Worf joins Kor at the table.
He's like, Worf, I can't believe you're making me work under someone from the Ketha Lowlands, which everyone knows is the real shithole of Kronosh.
Yeah.
The alien trash of the galaxy.
Worf's like, what do you want me to do? There's one possible ship I could stick you on in the Ninth Fleet. This is it.
Yeah. I mean, and Kor is grateful, like, grateful to have anything, but, like, it makes clear that this is, like, such a one-sided hate that Martok has. Like, Kor doesn't even remember, you know, he probably like signed a document that somebody put in front of him without reading it, and it struck Martok's name from a list.
If Martok is a true Klingon, he should appreciate that.
He does not.
He's slashed so many palms of hands over the years to make deals that all the palms look alike to him.
Well, you would think that Martok would have a little bit of understanding of this, because, like, the B plot of this episode is about how many documents Martok is signing. Like, Derek right. keeps coming up to him with just a stack of iPads.
He's become the thing that he hates.
Yeah. It's treated with a lot more subtlety than I expected.
Kor might be a little too old for this assignment, and the first hint of that is that Worf tells him that he's been assigned to the Chitang, and he immediately forgets what ship he's assigned to.
He's like, hey, before you go, which Tang again?
As soon as Worf leaves, Kor kind of like closes his eyes. He's like, Chitang, Chitang, Chitang. Like, does that thing like where you meet a new person and you're trying to remember their name?
Yeah, he takes out his knife and on his palm, he uses it to carve Chitang on his palm.
Yeah.
There's a shot right after this scene that is like a god shot of the station with the Klingon birds of prey over it and a bunch of Federation ships under it that really made me sit up in my seat. I loved seeing this. It was so cool looking.
Yeah. Any new angle on the station with ships around it is all right by me.
Yeah.
One thing that's clear aboard the Chitang is that the crew fucking loves Kor. And if you didn't even know the backstory that Martok said a couple scenes ago, you don't like the thunder stealing.
Yeah.
Martok's the captain, and there's a real life war hero on board, and they want to suck his gach so hard. Like, everyone's like fighting over it.
Yeah. He is the Emperor, and Kor is Maximus, and unlike the Emperor, like, Martok cannot hang when all of the glory is accruing to somebody else, and he really acts like a baby with a poopy diaper for most of this episode in reaction to this. Like, he really fucking can't get over this.
It's hurtful when someone holds court in your court.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happening here. I felt some sympathy for Martok in this scene. He's a total fucking bastard later on.
Yeah.
In a way that earns far less sympathy for me. But right here, I sort of get it.
I feel sympathy for him, but I just feel like as a leader, you've got to play this differently, you know?
Here's what I thought. Why aren't there the old school rules of the Pach involved here? Should they not be threatening to kill each other immediately? I feel like this is a capital offense, what's happening here in the mess hall of the Chitang.
Mm.
I feel like they should go to knives on it.
Yeah, that would have been nice. On the station, we get a scene of Esri and Kira having a hang. And this was a bit of dialogue that I really liked. Like, the opening discussion is about, you know, Esri kind of experiencing some kind of weird summarizations of what she means to people, just really like skeeving her out.
I'm sure it'll pass.
And Kira, you know, just kind of offering a friendly ear for this. And Esri is like impressed with Kira's therapy skills. And then they just start doing bits about what Kira would be like as a therapist, and I loved it.
You want to try jobs?
Yeah, it's pretty fun. They both agree that she'd be terrible.
I love Funny Kira. Funny Kira is a mode that we know exists and we don't get to see very often.
It's one of the things that makes Kira the total package to me.
Mm-hmm. I felt even more in love with her in this scene.
Odo doesn't deserve her.
You're crazy.
Anyway, Quark overhears their conversation like halfway through it. He's got a tray full of beverages. And at the conclusion of this scene, you're kind of like, what half of that conversation did he hear? Because if he came through midstream, there could be an interpretation of a thing that was unintended.
Do you need something?
No.
You have to remember that Quark is a man with giant ears, so he can hear everything super well.
He does not need to be close to the table with a tray full of beverages.
Yeah, unless the story doesn't call for him to have gotten the full picture of what they were talking about. So,
yeah.
In which case, he won't have heard critical context.
Do you think if you don't umax in a while, your hearing gets worse? Like, you really need to blast those ears.
Yeah, he needs to clear out the pipes.
Yeah. And maybe that was the difference here. It's been a while for Quark, so...
Yeah, Quark is seeming a little pent up in the lobe region.
You can't have your parabolic microphone covered in cum. You gotta clean that thing off so it'll work properly.
Yeah.
So what he tells Odo, because he's shocked when he returns to the bar, and Odo's like, what are you shocked about? And Quark is like, I think that Ezri wants to get back together with Worf.
Which we know is like a real taboo in Trill culture too. And I wish they'd talked a little bit about that. You know, I know it's not my place to say, but that's like against the rules for their people. And it also sucks for me because I was going to try and make a play or whatever.
Right. I don't know why Odo would care, really.
It's that, like, is Odo actually Quark's friend question?
This is kind of a mind blower for Quark. He's going to have to come up with a next step here.
Well, they needed an F story in this episode, so...
Right.
Back on the Chitang, General Martok is about to fly off the handle about what Kor represents to him when Worf, anticipating this, asks Martok to tell the assembled crew what the plan is, and he describes their battle plan for sending a couple of ships in to cause some light damage to the first installation they're attacking, and then bringing the full force of their fleet to bear when the rescue crews come out. It's a real fucked up, you know, like the Geneva Conventions explicitly forbid the kind of war making that Martok is up to here.
You aren't allowed to attack the hospital ship.
Yeah, but Kor is like super into it.
Glad you approve.
Of course.
And... you know, like any old timer can make a comparison to a previous experience of his, but it really feels like it's usurping some of Martok's thunder.
He's an old that has the same five stories to tell, and so he pivots the conversation into one of those stories.
You were Caleb Bohr.
Of course he was.
When the Trelka 5 mission begins, Kor begins to lose it fairly soon.
Yeah, there's a red alert and, you know, everybody's being summoned to the bridge, and it becomes clear that he is suffering from some kind of disorientation.
I'm supposed to be somewhere.
Too many headbutts over the years, probably, right?
Yeah.
This is a pretty wild sequence we get of Bird of Prey as fighter jet.
Yeah, very cool to see the in-atmosphere combat tactics of the Klingons.
Yeah.
It's a combination of like practical models that they blew up and CG ships that they added. It feels a lot more like Star Wars than Star Trek, the way the ships move around.
I can hold it.
Pull up!
No, I'm all right.
Lohara is gone.
I love how much foreshadowing we're given to this raid. Like, I feel like we hear about the specifics of it a couple of times, and I think the repetition there really serves us when Worf and Martok go down during, because when Kor takes command and authorizes a second pass,
yeah,
everyone knows what a huge mistake that is. Because of how much we know about the plan, we know that a second pass is going to be fatal, because by that point, everyone's going to know where they are and the defenses are going to be ready. The element of surprise is what this plan was all about. And yeah, and sacrificing that is dumb.
They're not trying to seize this installation. They're not trying to completely destroy it. They're trying to inflict a lot of damage that will be costly and distracting for the Dominion to deal with.
Right.
And when, you know, Martok gets like knocked out of his seat and is like writhing on the floor dealing with injuries, when Kor kind of like seizes the advantage and starts issuing commands, and what becomes clear is that he believes that he is in the Battle of Caleb IV.
The Battle of Maxius, sir. That's what it is.
Which was an ancient, by our standards, battle that he participated in against the Federation.
We know Worf and Martok are going to be fine because no girders have dropped from the ceiling of the bridge here.
Right. It's all sparks, no girders, I would say, is what they're dealing with.
What are you doing now?
Exactly.
There is a moment here where, like, Martok isn't quite with it to get up on his feet. He's sort of mumbling shit about Kor's stupid plan. And then he gets with it enough to throw a knife at Kor in order to kill him. How many times did you watch the knife catch?
I watched it several times. It's got to be in reverse, right? With like a wire.
I thought the same thing. I couldn't quite figure it out because there are several seconds after the catch that look like they play forward in a plausible way that haven't been just reversed footage.
Yeah.
They really hide it well, however they did it. I thought it was a notably good sequence.
I mean, it's a episode with particularly good visual effects all the way through, and this was a real highlight. I mean,
how does Martok have any depth perception for knife throwing, though? he should be winging that thing across the bridge, and except he totally bullseyes Kor here. Yeah. If Worf doesn't catch it,
yeah, Kor would be eating knife.
I'm trying to imagine an episode where Kor does take the knife to the dome.
That's how he goes out.
And like, I know this episode is all about giving him the hero's death. It feels like all of season 7 is about hero's exits.
Yeah. Do you think that a Klingon bird of prey becomes an easier target when suddenly everyone on the bridge is screaming to the heavens to let Stovokor know a warrior is coming for a few seconds?
There's no running silent or running cloaked when the screams are happening.
Escape course, now!
Back on Deep Space Nine, Quark actually steps to Esri in the bar.
He shoots a shot.
This is a scene that starts, like, for some reason Jake is hanging out in the bar, and like you kind of think he's going to be like a part of this scene at the beginning, and then he really isn't.
I kind of thought he was drunk with how he was draped over the bar the way
he looked
is.
A little drunk, yeah.
But the more I thought about it, the more I was like, Srock Lofton's a tall drink of water. I bet they were just folding him over to fit him in frame for how the scene was composed, you know?
But he's also just like giving a real chill vibe off, you know? Like, if a Dabo girl goes on break, she's gonna find the stool next to him.
I think giving, for some reason, Jake a drinking problem in season 7 would have been an interesting wrinkle to introduce.
A little parallel alcoholism story to Damar's.
Imagine how much more Captain Sisko would hate Quark for over-serving Jake.
Chief O'Brien like radios up to ops and is like, "Sorry, Captain, I'm gonna have to put off repairing that bullion freighter. There is like so much vomit on the promenade right now, and I unfortunately think it was your son."
You do not want to clean vomit out of the mesh at Quark's bar.
Was O'Brien in this episode?
In the very beginning,
he's in that beginning shot, and that's it, right?
That's it. Yeah. In this scene, it had been so long since we've been in the B story. I was like, oh, right, there is a B story. Here it is. it's Quark and Ezri, and the thing that affected me most about this scene wasn't Quark shooting his shot and potentially missing. It's how right he is about what he's saying about Worf.
Worf has done nothing, and I mean nothing, to deserve you.
Yeah.
Whether or not Ezri is interested in getting back into Worf is irrelevant when you just think about the truth of Worf not deserving her if she did desire that.
It is kind of amazing to see Quark show his whole asshole to Ezri and her be like, oh, that was cute. Let me give you a little kiss on the cheek.
Armin Shimmerman is great in this scene. Like, he gets the spotlight treatment for this moment.
Yeah.
And the shot of him before the kiss, like there's shot, reverse shot of them.
Yeah.
The one before, after he shoots his shot, and there's like a pregnancy in, oh shit, like the realization washes over him. Really good moment for him as an actor, I thought.
And I think also a good moment for him as an actor when his character is under the false impression that she has fallen in love with him, because he goes back and like gloats about this to, for some reason, Jake, and is excited in a way that is infectious. Like, you feel so bad for him for how excited he is.
She loves me.
What?
Everyone knows a person like this. Like, when you're crushing on a person, everything is meaningful.
He's engaged in a bit of lobeful thinking.
Yep.
You get mad at me when I do something that might be the title. It's very unfair.
He's the king of lobeful thinking. Here's a question, Ben. Is a Moscow Mule the first real drink we've ever heard ordered at Quark's, or on either Deep Space Nine or TNG?
I
cannot remember a real drink order like this happening.
Aside from like root beer, it might be the first time. Like an actual cocktail.
Yeah, yeah.
That is not a like Talarian sunset or whatever.
That's what I mean. That really got my attention.
Yeah.
Why aren't they drinking more real drinks on Star Trek?
I don't know. Moscow Mule is one of the few cocktails that is good enough to make it all the way into the future.
Yeah.
I mean, if you try a Temerian Sunset, you're never going to want like a martini ever again. You're like, fuck that.
Here's a tip. Speaking of the Moscow Mule.
Mm.
Moscow Mule is famously the ginger beer and vodka combination in the cup that sometimes a place will make you leave a deposit for.
Right, because they give you that copper mug that is so precious.
I wouldn't do that with ginger-flavored soda water, which is what I'm drinking right now. In fact, I would encourage anyone not to get ginger-flavored soda water at all for any reason.
Wow, that's a hot tip.
It's not good. Not good by itself, not good with anything else.
Okay, I would have bought it if I'd seen it, but I'm glad I know.
I've done a thing that I'm hoping you will learn from my example.
I mean, there's so many mistakes I watch you make, and I'm grateful that I am not going to make those same mistakes.
Yeah, it's basically the foundation of our friendship.
Morn,
dear sweet morn,
morn.
You here, buddy?
Morn,
stop. Hammer time.
Back on the Chitang, Kor eats alone as Martok walks in. And this is a scene that made me feel like making fun of an old with a feeble mind might be without honor. This is extremely punching down.
This takes Martok way past the realm of redeemability. Because, yeah, they're dunking on him for being disoriented and or demented. Like, he has some kind of degenerative brain illness, as far as we can tell. And Martok is like a fucking cafeteria bully with his friends, dragging Kor for that fact.
Don't you have any respect for one of the greatest heroes of the Empire?
Kor does that thing, like, all he can do really is have that parting shot of like, all I can say is live fast and die young, my bros.
Savor the fruit of life, my young friends.
Boring!
it's a real cat in the cradle moment, right? Like, you'll be like me one day.
Yeah.
You fucking assholes.
It does make Martok seem like a jerk, but then, like, I watch how much fun he's having with his friends, and I am tempted by it.
Don't you go dying on me!
Later with Worf, the greatest indignity has occurred. Kor has been quietly demoted. The plan that they conspire about is forcing Kor onto Gowron. Poor Gowron.
Yeah.
What's he going to do with Kor?
It's a sad plan, because it's basically like, let's find him a desk job somewhere on Kronos, and...
Gowron famously, with tons of patience. This is going to go great.
Yeah, a deeply patient man. but then they, they're trying to make their escape from the Dominion, and they've got just a swarm of ticks flying up their asshole.
And they're gaining on us.
They check the fold in space, and, they do not like what they see.
No, yeah. It's loaded with them. And Worf comes up with a very, like, Starfleet solution to this very Klingon problem, which is, like, graviton burst, make their warp fields collapse so that they have to drop out of warp and fly at impulse for... I mean, if we can get them at impulse for 10 minutes, we'll be home free.
Am I the idiot that found the math that Worf did in his head completely unbelievable? He basically does a college word problem in his head about like a train leaving Chicago at 3 p.m. going 60 miles an hour. Like, he knows exactly the amount of time to distract the ticks in order to make it to Phoenix.
Wow. I did those kind of word problems in high school, Adam.
I went to a technical college.
I mean, like, the solution here is obvious, right? Like, they're going to have to do, like, one of the ships is going to have to drop back and do a suicide run to force these ticks into impulse power. And Worf volunteers as the person that's obvious to do it. And it's like, Worf, you're not the obvious person to do it. There's one person here that is more obvious than anyone.
It's me, Jake!
This is what ruined the surprise for me, because on the one hand, I'm like, this is the perfect time to kill Worf. He's got nothing else to live for. His stock is at its lowest. Kill Worf!
I mean,
somebody kill Worf!
It's at its lowest for Worf, but he wasn't in the mess hall making fun of somebody for...
Right.
For a brain illness.
Martok's stock in this episode may be lower than Worf's.
Yeah. I actually shorted Martok's stock right before I sat down to watch this episode, and I made a nice little profit.
Either we're headed for a brutal recession, or maybe we're not. In other words, somebody's wrong here.
And I'm actually going to invest in Worf stock after this episode, because I think it's going up after this.
They wrote themselves into this corner, though, that does not make the impact of the surprise hit as hard, you know, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Because it was always going to be Kor on this death mission. It eventually becomes Kor by the use of his hypo spray in the transporter room. He hypo sprays Worf right to the ground.
Well, the thing that I wanted more than anything was to have Klingold be involved in the heist, you know, like, he has that scene with Kor where he's like, yeah, here's what their plan is. They've got to, like, confuse the sensors and shoot a bunch of torpedoes and get a graviton pulse going. And Kor sees all the angles. Like, his mind is flagging, but the tactics of this are totally obvious to him. And Klingold is like, yeah, like, you know, Worf is a capable officer, but this is, like, this has got to be perfect the first time, and I just don't think he has the experience for it. But Klingold should have been part of distracting Worf. He should be on that ship too, right? Like, he needs a fucking pretext to die with honor.
Another thing that was lacking from this moment, I thought, was a musical accompaniment that grounded Worf in that kind of emotional sacrifice. There was nothing about the scene other than the dialogue that made me think there was a chance of Worf dying.
Yeah, they don't make you believe it.
You could obscure it a little bit by giving us a little bit of, like, minor key peanut butter on it.
And, like, if you think about, like, the, you know, next time on Deep Space Nine ad that runs on the syndicated TV station,
right,
set it up as this is the episode where Worf, like, dies in battle.
Right.
Next week, like, Worf is going to go die in battle. Come on. I'm in. Yeah.
It is a good day for Kor to die. A better day for Kor to die than it is for Worf.
I thought it was so interesting that in an episode with some pretty best-in-breed visual effects, this climactic battle in which a long-standing Star Trek character dies, it happens entirely off-screen.
Yeah.
But I think it's a pretty effective off-screen battle. Like, it's getting the news of this battle from the sensors on the bridge of the Chitang, mm-hmm. and holding off on the Bloodwine until we know it went well.
You know, what's great about it in context is that their growing distance from Kor means that they'll know less and less about the details of what's happening with him.
Right.
And that is serving the story in that the further out they get and the less that they know means the more successful the mission has become.
Yeah.
As it goes.
And you can tell, like, multiple stories in that scene too, because Martok starts the scene believing that Worf is running that ship, and I think that they could have pegged that emotional needle a little bit more. Martok, like, mourning the inevitable death of his brother because he sent him to stop the onrushing Jem'Hadar would have been a little bit better. But, like, the switcheroo when Worf comes in with his classic reversal of his famous line,
"Today was not my day to die."
You expect me to believe that the Chitang doesn't have a transporter chief, though? That seems like they're really slumming it there on the Chitang.
Yeah, they don't have a Cho'Brien.
No, they sure don't. Anyway, it's mission accomplished. We get a dissolve to mission accomplished, basically.
Yeah, and a you know, singing a song in the honor of the people that died to do that at the end. And this got me, man. Like, I was goosebumping it on the couch watching that moment in the episode.
I thought I heard singing, sir.
I love that Martok doesn't sing.
Mm-hmm.
That detail of him taking his grudge to the grave, so Adam-like. So perfect.
So you liked that he was like you?
Martok stock, back up, baby. You want to hold on Martok right now.
Just a belly full of hatred.
Yeah.
Did you like the episode, Adam?
You really want to do this? Here, now, okay, let's do it, do it.
There's a really complex idea happening here that I'm not sure is effectively told. Like, I think when you make enough friends and enough enemies in your life, you realize how little of a space there is between hate and pity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you really have it out for someone, and I don't know what this is like, but that space is so narrow, and so little can change a person's feelings for another between those two spots specifically. And seeing Martok go through that, I thought was a kind of story that Star Trek rarely tells.
Yeah.
I think we get a lot of familial conflicts that are neatly solved by the end that feel, you know, familially familiar to a lot of people. But the grudge is a thing too.
Yeah.
And when you don't have a good relationship to someone, how you navigate that is also a thing. And I think it's a harder story to tell. I think this is why. I liked the episode, and I think what people like about this episode is, like, we're going to give Kor the send-off, foundational Kor of TOS times. Like,
yeah.
He's a historical figure. And that is the main takeaway to this, but the B-story takeaway is that disaffected feeling that I think is really difficult stuff to convey. I'm glad it tried. I don't know if it succeeded entirely, but it really made me think.
I like your review. I feel really similarly about it. I think that it's a hard mode episode, and it's largely very successful at the things it tries. And I think it's a solid one. Thumbs up from me.
God, your thumb is gross. Did you break that thing?
Mm.
As a youth?
Yeah. Only people watching the live stream can see how gross it is, though.
God, it's like got four knuckles in it.
Hey, speaking of things that make me want to stick my thumbs up, Adam, do you want to check and see if we have any priority one messages?
Already there!
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first priority one message is of a promotional nature.
Hey!
The message goes like this. We're sending this message to the future from a frankly terrible present. We're pretty sure Janeway has been jacking around with the timeline, and hopefully by the time this P1 airs, the present will have righted itself. One thing is certain in all timelines, Jim Shimode will be working on their fitness.
Oh, that's Jim with a G.
Maybe not up in the gym, though, it says parenthetically. Listening to the pod and supporting each other, there's something for everyone on Jim Shimoda, from trap-based intensity to soul-soothing yoga. Come check us out.
Yeah.
And that call to action is to seek out the Jim Shimoda, Jim with a G group. I know them to be over on Facebook at the moment. I've met several of their members.
Yeah.
Back when we used to tour. Really, really good-looking muscle definition on everyone that I've met from that group. Yeah. Enviable to me, as I'm more of a sinewy body type.
Yeah.
There's ectomorph, there's endomorph, there's sinewmorph. That's me.
Yeah. We've met our share of trap queens and kings.
It's true. You know what? The Jim Shimoda shirt continues to be an unlikely seller for us.
Yeah.
Month in and month out, people are going for the Jim Shimoda shirt.
We do keep selling that shirt. Adam, our next priority one message is from David, and it's to Elizabeth, and it goes like this. Happy belated birthday to she who is my wife, and congratulations on becoming a tenured professor. Wow.
Whoa.
You continue to enrich my life immeasurably ever since that Trek-themed cocktail party when you let me make you a last word. It is green.
Last word's a good drink.
It is a good drink. Being your husband has been a fantastic adventure and the greatest honor I can imagine. I love you the most. Wow. Very sweet.
Very, very sweet.
Congratulations on becoming tenured, Elizabeth. That's fucking tough to do.
It's badass.
Super badass. Wow. Well, some fun P1s there. I hope more people get P1s for future shows. And the way to do that is by going to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron and setting one up. And hey, don't email us about Jumbotrons. Just set it up at MaxFun. And if you have questions, ask them.
They're perfect for that. They're the ones who do it. We don't do it.
We read what they send us. That's our involvement in it.
That's the relationship. That's where it ends.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
Take important stuff, stack it up. Doesn't give a fuck, everybody's drunk. And Tasha Yar's getting robot humped. Ben, no! Drunk Shimoda.
I mean, for me, it could only be Derek the valet, the old Klingon valet.
Yeah.
Who brings a bottle of blood wine to the bridge when he's not sure it's blood wine time. Like, I think he very clearly, like, is it time for the wine? Speaking of shooting shots, that was his shot.
Yeah.
He brings the wine to the bridge during Kor's mission. Mid-mission,
yeah.
Even. Bold move. I liked it. He's my drunk Shimoda for it.
Yeah.
What about you, Ben?
Well said. He is also my drunk Shimoda. And I think the reason I want to give it to him is knowing everything he knows about that last stand mission and knowing what we know about what Klingons want. Why does he not go? Why doesn't he just say, like, I will fucking sit on the bridge with you, you know?
His interests are so like Kor's here. It's insane.
and
he
like
should be there, you're right.
And he's a character that we meet, he's being just degraded by Martok. Martok like is openly derisive to him.
Yeah.
This would be a great way for him to go out, like a proper Klingon.
Really would. Instead, he's going to live out his days as an old.
Yeah.
He's not going to go out like a warrior like that. He's going to go out accidentally driving his car through his garage.
Gotta get that gold press latch. Get that
gold press latch.
Am I right? Yeah. Am I right?
Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it going to be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it, and I love it too. Because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean, with Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below the waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Well, we're going to go out by playing the Game of Buttholes, The Will of the Prophets, and I will tell you what we will be watching, and I'm hoping you will roll them bones and tell us how we will be watching it, Adam.
All right, I can do that.
Because next episode is Season 7, Episode 8, The Siege of AR-558. Sisko and the crew fight for their lives during a violent standoff at a key communications outpost.
This is a temp title, right? What's the real title of the episode?
That's what it's called.
Are you fucking kidding me? That's the stupidest episode title I think I've ever heard.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, that's...
I mean...
This is a show that has made its bones on, like, Shakespearean episode titles that go for like three lines that like fill the frame.
Yeah. It's more like a student film script that you know is gonna suck.
Yeah.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Well, we've got to figure out how we're going to watch an episode with a title like that. We're actually in a little bit of danger here, because our runabout is currently on square 20, where just a single square ahead is a space butthole. You know what I'm known for rolling.
Yeah.
Snake eye. And then a couple squares past that, we've got a banger, which would knock us five spaces back. It's big trouble ahead, and the die's in my hand.
Oh, so, boy. I'm nervous.
Ben, I've rolled a 2.
Whoa!
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
A 2 hops us right over the top of that space butthole and plants us firmly on square 22, where it's a regular old episode.
Damn, that's great.
You and me. Yeah.
I love a nice regular episode, Adam, and I also love the Friends of DeSoto who go to MaximumFun.org/join. You know, the Max Fun Drive is the best time of year to join up and support this show, but it's not actually a bad time of year to do it right now, because there's still gifts you get. I think there's still tiers and everything that you can support at. And if you've got it like that, we would super appreciate it. You get access to the bonus feed and all the bonus content. You get all kinds of stuff. It's good. It's good to do.
It supports the show, too.
Yeah.
Give me a break. Like, that's what it's really about, right?
It's about...
It's making sure Ben can move into a haunted house where he lives with his parents.
It's about making sure that I can service my onerous mortgage.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so we really, really appreciate it. And we also appreciate folks that tweet about how much they like the show or post about it on other social media. Of course, you can follow our social media at Greatest Trek. We're on Twitter and Instagram. And those are great places to follow because our buddy Bill Tilly runs those. He's like posting memes and, you know, people, you know, the birthdays of actors from beloved Star Trek episodes and all kinds of fun stuff.
I gotta thank Adam Ragusa at the end of every episode. He's one of the reasons why our show sounds so good, because he's the person who created the interstitial music based off of the original song that Dark Materia made and then loaned to us way back in the beginning of The Greatest Generation.
Dark Materia's gotta be regretting having granted us access to his song, right?
No.
We never heard from him again.
Well, I think that tells the story, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
We've heard Dark Materia is great.
Yeah. Listen to our other shows. We're in the midst of all of the new Star Trek coming out on The Greatest Discovery. And we're in the midst of some really fantastic films over on the hit war movie podcast, Friendly Fire.
Yeah, you want to get into that for sure. Great shows both. And with that... We'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine that is sure to have a better title. You know we have great titles on this show.
Sometimes. When I say them.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.